We're doing Navi, and what we're going to learn now quickly, you should learn more slowly and tell it over to your kids as stories. It's amazing stories, the stories of David and Shaul. So we ended last week with Shaul trying to kill David, and David isn't even aware of it. And every time Shaul misses, and David and Shaul realizes that Hashem is with David, and so he removes David. He's jealous of him, and he makes him a general over a battalion of 1,000 soldiers, and he's leading the nation to wars. And Shaul sees that wherever David goes, he's succeeding unnaturally. He's a youngster; he's not yet 30. And Shaul gets more and more scared of David, and David's name keeps rising. Shaul tells him, "I have a daughter, Merav, and I want you to marry her." He tells David, "I want you to be Merav's husband. I want you, though, to be a very brave warrior." Now, what's Shaul trying to do? He's trying to get David to take more risks to prove himself as a brave warrior. He'll take more risks. Eventually, he'll die. That's how people get killed, when you try to prove yourself. So he tells David, I want to see you prove yourself now as a great warrior. And David answers Shaul. He says, "Me, my family, what am I worth? I should marry the king's daughter." And Shaul tells him, "Yeah, there's all this money I owe you. I said whoever kills the Philistine will get all that money. You fight the wars and you will have her." So David does his end of the deal. And the time comes for him to marry Merav. And Shaul gives her to be married to Adriel HaMecholati. So David comes and says to Shaul, "What's the deal? Wait a second. You promised her to me. And not only that, we agreed that all the money you owe me would be the engagement money, the kiddushin money to her. How could you let her? That's tenacious ish. How could you do that?" Shaul tells him, the halacha says, "Hamekadesh b'milve. If you engage a woman with money that's owed to you, then the engagement is null and void. You had to give her something. You never gave her anything. So she's not your wife. So I gave her to Adriel." When Shaul does that, we will see now the next part of the story. Michal, Shaul's younger daughter, she really likes David. Shaul hears about it. He says, "Oh, good." So he says, let that be what will make him fall in the hands of the Philistines. So Shaul tells David, "I'll give you the better daughter, my second daughter." And David has been burnt. He was expecting to marry Merav, and that didn't happen. So Shaul has to get the servants to tell David, "The king really wants you. All the servants love you. We want you. You should be the king's son-in-law." So David hears it, and he tells them, "Me, what am I worth? Well, you guys think it's so simple to marry the king's daughter?" And they kept telling him. Shaul says, "Tell him I said that the only thing I want is 100 foreskins of the Philistines. If he brings me 100 foreskins, that'll show me he killed 100 Philistines." And Shaul figures, till he could kill 100 Philistines to cut off their foreskins, he'll fall. So David says, "Fine, great." So he goes with his men. He goes to a war. He kills 200 men. He collects 200 foreskins, and he sends it to the king. So the king gets, like on a platter, 200 foreskins. "Your Majesty, that's what you wanted." So now there's an underlying machloket between David and Shaul. Shaul thinks, "David isn't really married to my daughter, because in order for him to be married to her, he had to give her something. And he gave her something worthless, foreskins. He only married her with the money I owed him. He made the same mistake a second time." David says, "No, foreskins, you could feed them to the dogs. They're worth something. They're worth their dog food. I mean, they're something." So if David says, "I didn't mean to marry Michal with the money you owed me. So what if you owed me millions of shekels? My intention was to marry Michal with the foreskins. That's what you asked for. That's what I gave you. So Shaul holds that David is not really married to Michal. David is going to move in with Michal, and they're going to live as husband and wife, and David thinks Michal is his wife, and everything's good. He got married to the king in an underhanded way, whatever. They made the deal. They didn't make this big fancy wedding, but they're married. And all along, Shaul thinks, I tricked him again. He fell for it again. And that's why, in a few minutes, we're going to see that when David is on the run, Shaul will feel perfectly comfortable taking Michal and marrying her off to someone else. Shaul is a tzaddik. How do you do that? A married woman? How can you do that? Palti bin Laish, a big tzaddik? Why would he marry a married woman? The answer is because Shaul was walking around thinking, I tricked him again. He's not really married to my daughter. David, and we paskin like David, HaMekadesh b'milve v'chov, if someone engages a girl, he has a loan, he owes her $2 million. And aside from that, he gives her an apple. And he says, I want you to be engaged to me with this apple and the $2 million I owe you. So the question is he thinking about the $2 million or the apple? David says he's thinking about the apple. David says if he has a loan and he's giving her something concrete now, his focus is what I'm giving you now. The fact that the $2 million is also going to be yours, that's irrelevant. So, I'm sorry, she owes him $2 million. Not he owes her, she owes him $2 million. And he says, you are engaged to me with the $2 million you owe me, plus this apple. So what does he really mean? I'm engaging you with the apple and you'll also get the $2 million? Or he means the $2 million is what you were getting married with, plus I'm giving you the apple. So Shaul held, it's the $2 million you're thinking about. David held, I'm not. I'm thinking about the foreskins. Shaul held, what are foreskins worth? David said, they're dog food. They have a value. They're not worth a lot, but they're worth something. Fruit of their worth. So back to the Navi. So David marries Michal and she really loves him. Shaul is getting more and more scared from David. And every time there's a war, David is the most successful general. He keeps knocking the Philistines off their feet. And so Shaul summons a council of all his men, including his son, one of his top generals, Yonatan. And he says to them, we have a problem. We have to kill David. And Yonatan tells David, you have to get out of here. My father wants you dead. And Yonatan is Shaul's son. Not yet.
He dies together.
But they're like buddy.
Right? Yonatan, David are good friends.
Shaul couldn't have killed him if his mamash ben
He tried and it didn't work. Now he gets his servants together and he says it's time we have to get together and kill him. Now for Shaul, that's not a simple thing to do politically, because David is now very popular, so he has to make sure his men are with him at least on it. Yonatan, you see, was not with him. We're going to see Yonatan stands up for him many times. So Yonatan tells David, you go hide, and I'm going to stand next to my father, and I'll talk to him, and I'll see what he says, and then we'll see what happens. So Yonatan goes and he tells his father, you know, David is really good to you, and it's really good for us that he's here. You know, whatever he's doing benefits all of us. He risks his life, and you were pretty embarrassed by what was happening with Goliath, and he saved your shame. Why would you kill him? He's innocent. He's done nothing wrong. Shaul listens to him, and he says, I promise we won't kill him. Fine. Yonatan calls David and he says everything's okay. And life goes back as usual. David sees Shaul. Shaul sees David. Everything's back. There's another great war. And again, David is extraordinarily successful. And when he comes back from war, it's not beneath his dignity. He comes back and he sees that Shaul is very upset. Shaul has heard all of the great military campaigns that David does. So David sits down and starts playing music for Shaul. Here we see the humility of David. You know, one of the chief rabbis of Israel, one of the great leaders, the Gdolei Hador, was Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. When his mother-in-law was an old lady, so the grandchildren decided to make her cassette recordings of each grandson laning Tehillim, reading Tehillim, so she would enjoy listening to it. So it wasn't even his grandmother, it was his wife's mother. I'm sorry, it was his mother-in-law. Mother-in-law. And Rav Shlomo Zalman made such a sweet recording that was her favorite recording, to hear him reading Tehillim. So, is it beneath his dignity? No, it's not beneath his dignity. So, David is playing music for his father-in-law. His father-in-law is upset, so he sits down and plays music for him. And Shaul picks up the spear, and he charges at David, and David sees it in the last second, and David slips, he makes a quick move, and the spear hits the wall, and David runs. He realizes he just tried to kill me. So David runs away from his father-in-law. We are going to learn from David and Shaul how a son-in-law has to behave.
Run from the father all the time.
No. At the end, after all the times that Shaul tries to kill David, in their last meeting, David will look at him and say to him, Ve'avi re'ei gam re'ei. Father, look, I have the corner of your garment, I could have killed you, and I didn't. And from there the Jerusalem Talmud learns, you see that David called his father-in-law father, Avi he called him. From there we learn that a son-in-law is supposed to respect his father-in-law. I guarantee you, I hope, you won't have a father-in-law that tries to kill you. As bad as you think your father-in-law is, I don't think it's going to be that. And you see that in spite of that, David called him Avi, my father. Coming back to our story.
And you have to be cool because it's your wife's father. And she won't love you if you're not good to her father.
So David runs. And David comes home to his wife. And Shaul sends men to his home. He tells them, I want you to guard the front door because tomorrow morning you'll bring him and he'll die. So his wife tells him, Shaul's daughter tells him, if you don't escape tonight, tomorrow you're dead. So Michal lets him out the back window. She lowers him down. Must have been a strong lady. And he runs. And when David would leave his wife, she would miss him. So he made a little figurine that looked like him. So she could have like a picture of him when he was away. So she took that and put it in bed. And she took some goat's hair and put it on top. And she covered it with a garment as though David is lying in bed. So the next morning, Shaul sends word, we need to take David. And Michal tells the messengers, tell my father, he's sick. And Shaul sends messengers and he says, bring him here in bed. He has to be executed. So the messengers come into the house and they come to lift the bed and they see that they were tricked. So they bring Michal to the king. So Michal comes to the king and Shaul tells her, why'd you trick me? Why'd you let my enemy escape? So Michal says to her father, she says, you married me off to a man like that? He drew his sword, he was ready to kill me. What are you doing marrying me off to a guy like that? And, there's no reason to get her father upset. So she says, you married me off to a guy like that. Now David ran, and he comes to Shmuel. Okay, so he's coming to the Rebbe, the one who anointed Shaul, the one who anointed him. And he comes to Shmuel and he tells him everything that happened. And he sits down with Shmuel. This is going to be his last meeting with Shmuel. He's on the run. He knows they're going to kill him. And he spends the night with Shmuel doing what? So the Pasuk says, they sat in Nayot. Where's Nayot? That's next to where I live. It's in the Benjamin region. What were they doing in Nayot? So our sages say the word Nayot is not Nayot. Nayot really comes from the word Nave. The word Nayot means they were settling into the house. Which house? Our sages say they were settling into the house of Hashem. They spent the whole night trying to figure out, where do we build the Beit HaMikdash? It was hidden. David, in his last meeting with Shmuel, says, Rebbe, teach me. One day, you told me I'm going to be king, so it's going to be my responsibility to build a house in honor of Hashem. So he sits with Shmuel to analyze the geography of the area of Benjamin and Judea, and figure out which mountaintop is supposed to be the Beit HaMikdash. And they take the text, and they start looking around, and they come to a conclusion, which mountaintop, where is supposed to be the Temple Mount? That's what it means. David was sitting with Shmuel in Nayot. They were sitting in the homes. They were sitting, figuring out, what home do we build for Hashem? To my mind, this was always a tremendous lesson. The man's on the run. He thinks he's going to be dead. And he says, yeah, but there's some Torah I have to get from Shmuel before he goes. And he's focused on the service of Hashem. Sometimes in life, we have to look beyond our own troubles. What's my task? What's my duty? How will I accomplish my next mission? Right now I have a problematic mission, but how am I accomplishing the next mission? David isn't bogged down by the present. The present is its problem. David is worried about building the future. Shaul gets word that David is there learning Torah by Shmuel, so he sends messengers to summon David. And when Shaul's messengers come, they find Shmuel surrounded with young students who are all prophesizing. So the messengers that show up, they're affected. And they also start prophesizing. And when you see clarity, when you have prophecy, so you're not interested in nonsense, so they're not interested in taking David. So Shaul gets word, so he sends a second group. And the same thing happens to the second group. They come to Shmuel's home, and they start prophesizing, and they're not interested. So Shaul sends a third group, and the same thing happens a third time. Shaul wants to connect to their bone Shalom. One of the most tragic figures in Jewish history. Such a pious person. He's tried to do everything right in his life. And Hashem has told him he's failed. And so Shaul hears that whoever comes there gets prophecy. So he says, I want that too. And so Shaul personally goes to Shmuel's home. And when he gets there, so Shaul too gets nevuah, which is what he wanted. And when he gets there, he removes all his royal clothing. It's not important anymore. Who cares about that? He's on a totally different level. And he's standing there before Shmuel all day and all night on a different level. He's in a different place. And this is the final time that Shaul will merit prophecy. He had prophecy when he started his task as king, and he's having prophecy now as his kingdom is coming to a close. And David runs away. And he comes to Yonatan, and he says, tell me, what did I do? Why does your father want me dead? Yonatan says, no, my father discusses everything with me. He wouldn't do anything without talking to me. Why do you think he would hide it from me? And David says, I promise, your father knows we're good friends, and he didn't want to hurt you. But I'm telling you that I was a footstep away from death. I literally took one step, and that's what saved my life. So Yonatan says to David, tell me, what do you want me to do? I'll do whatever you want. David says, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh. And ordinarily, there's the royal meal, and the king has a meal with all the top men, and I'm supposed to be there. And I'm going to hide. And if your father asks, where am I? So you'll say, I asked for permission to be with my family. We have a family event, and I went there to celebrate with my family. If your father says, great, so then you're right. Things are okay. But if your father gets all upset, so you should realize he's getting upset because he really wants me dead. It's over. Do me a favor. We made a covenant with one another. If I've done something wrong, kill me. But why would you give me over to your father's hand? And Yonatan says, no, if I know that anything's that my father wants to do you harm, I'm going to tell you. Of course, God forbid I would keep it a secret from you. So David asks Yonatan, who's going to tell me? Because it could be they will follow you. It could be people are, your father knows I'm in trouble and he knows I might come to you. So it could be your father will put spies to follow you. So Yonatan says, let's go out to the field. They go out to the field. Yonatan tells him, I swear by Hashem, I will try to find out all the truth from my father. And in 3 days, I'm going to come back and give you word. And if things are troubled, don't worry, I'm going to tell you. And Hashem should be with you just as he was with my father. And he says, but promise me that when you become king, you will be kind to my family. Promise me that your kindness will be with my family forever. And I bless you that Hashem should cut down all your enemies from before you. David promises, and he won't live up to his promise. David will accept Lashon Hara and believe one of Yonatan's children, servant. Yonatan has a child who is crippled. His name is Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth will have a servant who will tell David that Mephibosheth is plotting a rebellion against him. And that servant, his name is Tziva. David will believe Tziva and he will tell Mephibosheth, I'm taking away half your assets and giving it to the servants because you plotted against me. And a heavenly voice will come out and say, you promised. And if you go half-half and you split Mephibosheth's assets, I am saying half-half on your kingdom. And that's when the decree comes out that David's kingdom would be split, which is what happens in his grandson's time. So this moment in Jewish history where Yonatan tells him, I'm going to do everything to save you, and you promise me that when you become king, you will be kind to my children, this is a moment that's marked in heaven. And David is held to this moment. So Yonatan makes David promise again and again, and finally Yonatan tells David, here's a stone, this huge rock, that people always test their strength. If they can move that rock, it's called Evin Azel. I'm going to come here, and I'm going to practice my archery. Yonatan is from the tribe of Benjamin, and the tribe of Benjamin were known for their archery skills. So he says, I'm going to come here, and I'm going to shoot 3 arrows, and I'm going to aim at something, and I'm going to tell the lad, go fetch the arrows. Now the lad is going to go, and if I tell the lad, the arrows are further in, go further, the arrows are further down, that's a sign for you that you better go further away, that there's danger. But if I tell the lad, no, the arrows are closer, come closer, so then that's a sign you could reveal yourself, everything's okay. And so David goes to hide. Now David and Yonatan's conversation is problematic. Because in their conversation, they both recognize there are going to be 2 days Rosh Chodesh. They speak about meeting on the 3rd day. How did they know there would be 2 days Rosh Chodesh? If we understand the halacha simply, you go out and you wait and see if there's a new moon or not. And from here, Rabbeinu Hananel develops his famous position that the rabbis always knew the math of the new moon. The witnesses was an added mitzvah to have witnesses. But the calculations of the new moon were based on calculations. Rambam goes out against that opinion. But that is a strong opinion of Rabbeinu Hananel, one of the late Gaonim, early Rishonim. And other Rishonim also have that opinion. Rambam says, no. They waited, they saw, it was based on what they saw. Others say, no, there was a calculation. They knew what they were expecting to see. One of the proofs is here, that in the verse you see that they knew there would be 2 days Rosh Chodesh. They're talking about meeting on the 3rd day. So here's what happens. David's hiding in the field and he doesn't dare make a move. So he's hiding and he has no food. And because he has no food, he's on the run. He becomes more and more ravenous. But he dares not go into civilization. and he has no food where he's hiding. Day one passes, day two passes. Yonatan is sitting at the meal the first day. Shaul looks, and David is missing. Shaul figures, maybe David is impure. Maybe Shaul felt that after they had that prophecy together, things were back sweet again. And so the next day, it's the second day of Rosh Chodesh, Shaul asks Yonatan, why isn't the son of Yishai here? He's already putting David down. Doesn't call him by his name. Why isn't the son of Yishai here, yesterday or today? Yonatan says he asked permission to go to his family. He said, we have a family event, and my big brother sent word that they're expecting me. Is it okay if I go? And Shaul tells Yonatan, you rebellious son, I know that you're in cahoots with the son of Yishai. It's a shame to you and a shame to your mother's privacy. All the days that he's alive, your kingdom will not be established. Summon him here because he deserves to be killed. And Yonatan fires back and he says, why would he get killed? What did he do? And Shaul picks up his spear and he's ready to hit Yonatan. And Yonatan understands it's over, that Shaul wants David dead. And Yonatan gets up upset and he doesn't eat on that day. He's so upset. His father's put him down in front of everyone, and he's upset for David. So Yonatan goes out the next morning, and he makes a critical error, which all of the Jewish people will pay the price for. He forgets to bring some food for his friend David. He forgets that his friend was out in the field for a very long time. And Chazal say it's so important to give people food. We sometimes overlook it today. We think everyone's okay. You have a friend, he's going to the airport tonight. Give him a little package. Bezrat Shem, you'll be married. You'll have guys over. At the end of the meal, put together a care package. You'll have children who go off to yeshiva. Send them with some food. A little bit of food goes a tremendous way. I know they make fun of me at the machon. I know they say my class is where they fatten you up. I've heard the lines behind my back. I know what they say. But there's a logic behind it. Chazal say, when you give someone food, you come closer to them. Gidola legima. Our sages say, when you offer someone to eat and drink, so then you are getting closer to the person than you could without it. And there are whole families who became a part of the people of Israel because they gave someone to eat. There was an Egyptian who came out to Midianite territory and he helped a few girls and their father said, call him in, maybe he needs a meal. His name is Moshe Rabbeinu. The Midianite is Yisro. His family became part of the Jewish people because they offered him a hot meal. Chazal say, learn from Yisro. Offering a person a hot meal can change your family's life. Offering a hot meal. You know, I have the good fortune of being rabbi of a community in Kochav Yaakov. How did I get there? I'll tell you a story that most people don't know. There was a student at Machon Meir who we offered to eat in our house. And we told him that he could come whenever he wants. We used to live down the block. And he used to come to us for meals. And then one day, he was talking to his chavrusa, and his chavrusa said, you know, in Kochav Yaakov, we're looking for a rabbi. And he got me the job. He said, there's a rabbi I like. Why don't you guys interview him? I wasn't even in the country at the time. The rest is history. Chazal say, Yonatan made a critical error here. He didn't bring some food for David. You're meeting up with him, bring him something. David is ravenous. Yonatan goes out to the field and he starts shooting the arrows. He tells the lad, go further, go further. And he shoots the arrows. And he tells the lad, it's even further away, go on. And the lad quickly gathers the arrows and he comes back to Yonatan. And Yonatan gives him his bows, his arrows, and he says, go bring them back to the city. The lad goes back and they look around and there's no one there. And David understood the hint. And so David has gotten the worst message he can get. He is now a fugitive. He has to be on the run. The king wants him dead. And David sees that no one's around, so he will come, and he comes and bows to Yonatan 3 times. They hug, they kiss, and Yonatan tells him, go in peace. Remember our promise. You and me, your children, my children. And Yonatan goes back to the city, he's upset, and David is hungry. And so David starts running, and he comes to the city of Nov. Nov is the religious capital of the time. There wasn't Jerusalem. Nov was where the Mishkan was. And at Nov, while David is there, so there's a man named Doeg the Edomite, who has always been David's nemesis. And he doesn't know exactly what's been going on. And David rushes into the high priest, to the Kohen Gadol, and he tells him, I'm on a secret mission. No one's allowed to know I'm here. The king sent me on a very top secret mission. Doeg sees David go into the king, into the Kohen Gadol. And this is where we'll pick up Ezrat Hashem next week.